Hello, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, a syndicated radio talk show that airs on dozens of radio stations in the US and Europe since 2002. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. During this episode of Arab Voices, episode number 1181, I will have a couple of segments. First, we will listen to the Electronic Intifada newscast, a summary of the latest developments in occupied Palestine, highlighting the ongoing genocide in Gaza. During the second segment, I will air the remarks of Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib and Mahmoud Khalil, delivered at the People's Conference held recently in Detroit, Michigan, under the slogan, Gaza is the Compass. Let's begin with the latest Electronic Intifada newscast, a summary of the latest developments in occupied Palestine, presented by Noura Burrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada.
This is the Electronic Intifada newscast. I'm Noura Burrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 699 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel has killed at least 571 Palestinians and injured nearly 2,320 between August 27th and September 3rd, according to official records from the Ministry of Health in Gaza. The Israeli army has committed massacres in Gaza City and northern Gaza areas using airstrikes, fire belts, drone attacks, and bomb-filled remote-controlled vehicles to destroy residential buildings, ambulances, and tent shelters of displaced Palestinian families. On Saturday, August 30th, Israel bombed a bakery and a tent shelter in Al-Nasser neighborhood of Gaza City, killing at least 12 children and adults as they were waiting for bread. Journalist Mustafa Sarsour captured video of a man in agony as he mourned over the bodies of three small children. Al-Nasser neighborhood was bombed again on Monday, September 1st. Reporter Mahmoud Abu Salama reported from Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City, where bodies of Palestinians were brought in by their families on carts and stretchers. Another massacre of children happened on Tuesday, September 2nd, when at least five children were killed while waiting for water in Al-Mawasi in western Gaza, an area the Israeli army had designated as a so-called safe zone, but which it has bombed relentlessly over the course of the last 23 months. Mahmoud Bassal, the spokesperson for Gaza's civil defense, said that the children, quote, were standing in line to fill up water in the Al-Mawasi area, which has been described as safe, when the occupation forces directly targeted them, turning their search for life into a new massacre. Euromed Human Rights Monitor stated on Wednesday that its field team reviewed several videos published by Israeli soldiers showing them, quote, shooting at Palestinians in displacement camps for amusement or to bet on their accuracy. This demonstrates that the shooting is not driven by any specific purpose or military necessity, but rather reflects a deliberate policy aimed at causing maximum civilian deaths and destruction, while denying Palestinians any sense of safety, Euromed added. The group documented the killing of Ahlam Ra'ed Faiz Al-Sha'er, 26, a mother of two, by Israeli army gunfire on the morning of September 1st while she was making tea in her tent in Al-Mawasi. Al-Sha'er's father-in-law told Euromed Monitor's team that his daughter-in-law was preparing tea for her two children, Ayman and Karam, when an Israeli quadcopter shot her in the head in front of them. He said his two grandchildren are now orphans. Humanitarian activist Saeed Shoaib captured this clip moments after Israeli forces committed a massacre in the Burej refugee camp in central Gaza on Sunday. The screams of children can be heard as the camera shows images of shredded bodies and injured children. Yeah. Israel is using incendiary bombs and grenades to set fires to buildings and tent shelters. Instagram user Ehab Noor filmed footage of one such attack earlier this week with enormous plumes of flames and smoke enveloping a residential building. Israeli forces set the tents of displaced families ablaze on Wednesday, September 3rd, by dropping grenades on shelters in the Sheikh Radwan neighborhood of Gaza City. A 60-year-old mother of five told an international news agency that Sheikh Radwan, quote, is being burned upside down. The occupation destroyed houses, burned tents, and drones played audio messages ordering people to leave the area. Quote, if the takeover of Gaza City isn't stopped, we might die, and we are not going to forgive anyone who stands and watches without doing anything to prevent our death, she said. Our contributor Asim An-Nabi in Gaza City wrote on Tuesday that, quote, every day and for 2 weeks now, several massive explosions have been occurring, which the Gazawis have come to call nasif, demolitions, where columns of smoke mixed with thick dust rise up. And while we cannot see the rubble of our homes and neighborhoods that are being demolished, the force of the explosion is enough to make a piece of your heart explode completely as soon as another part of Gaza explodes, Asim wrote. Israel used incendiary bombs to target cars and ambulances near a clinic in the Sheikh Radwan neighborhood on Tuesday. Civil defense worker Mohammed Abu Luay filmed his colleagues as they scrambled for buckets of water, trying to extinguish the flames. That was the civil defense on Tuesday in Sheikh Radwan, Gaza City. Earlier that day, journalist Mahmoud Abu Salama reported from Sheikh Radwan to document the advance of the Israeli army. Abu Salama says that during the invasion, along with detonating bomb-filled vehicles to destroy buildings, Israeli snipers have been targeting Palestinians on the streets. He says, quote, as you can see, bullets are hitting civilians and gunfire is being fired from vehicles and snipers stationed around Sheikh Radwan, he said. While she was reporting live earlier this week, Al Jazeera journalist Noor Abu Rakba broke down in tears talking about her mother being forcibly displaced amidst the annihilation of Gaza City. She says, quote, my mom doesn't know where to go or where the next destination will be. The situation is extremely difficult. The occupation is trying to split the city of Gaza from its homeowners. It's trying to encircle them in the west of Gaza, showing them no mercy. It is shelling them wherever they are. It is shelling them in the tents. It is shelling them on the beach. Her colleague Hamam Yunus captured this clip. Noor Abu Rakba. Israel is determined to wipe Gaza City off the map, EuroMed Human Rights Monitor declared on September 1st, and it is using an arsenal of some of the most destructive tools ever built with complete impunity. Quote, the Israeli army is destroying about 300 residential units daily in Gaza City and Jabalia, using around 15 robots carrying nearly 100 tons of explosives, EuroMed stated. These bombings are taking place at an unprecedented pace, aimed at destroying Gaza City and displacing its residents as part of a dangerous escalation of the ongoing genocide against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip for nearly 23 months. EuroMed Monitor's field team documented the Israeli army's intensified use of armored, explosive-laden robots to achieve their goal of completely erasing one of Palestine's oldest and largest cities. Euromed says that at the current rate, the rest of the city could be destroyed within 2 months, a timeline that may shorten further given the Israeli army's massive firepower and the absence of any pressure to halt its crimes against Palestinians. After preliminary assessments of the robot attacks, Euromed Monitor estimates that each robot can completely or partially destroy around 20 housing units. This will soon leave hundreds of thousands of people without homes or shelters, forcing them to flee once again in deadly conditions, without even the bare minimum for survival. The robots used in the bombing are essentially Israeli military vehicles, such as outdated M113 armored personnel carriers, loaded with tons of explosives and remotely piloted through civilian neighborhoods. They are directed to explode in carefully selected locations to maximize destruction. In some cases, the robot is not rigged to detonate, but is fitted with large boxes of explosives that are unloaded at the target site, after which the vehicle is returned to base for reuse in other operations. This reflects an organized military strategy aimed at systematically destroying residential neighborhoods and maximizing the scale of devastation, Euromed stated. However, the rescue workers and civil defense crews say that they are continuing to use all available tools to continue their work protecting their community. Mohammed Abu Luay, the civil defense worker who I mentioned earlier, he says, quote, "Have you ever asked yourself how we, throughout the entire period of war, how we saved thousands of lives and retrieved dozens of martyrs from underneath the rubble? Let me show you how we work with the equipment. Of course, the equipment is very simple and light, consisting of work gloves, a spade, a shovel, a bolt cutter, and a sledgehammer. If there is a ceiling and there are people underneath the rubble, we would have to break the ceiling so we can rescue the civilians. There are big and small cutters, big and small hammers. Give them to any country in the world and they would tell you it's impossible for them to work with these tools. But here in Gaza, nothing is impossible. With the power of God first and the high morale of our men second, we work with the simple equipment all the time. Here is Gaza, a symbol of pride, where nothing is impossible." Meanwhile, Israeli soldiers working with U.S. mercenary forces continue to trap, abduct, hunt, and kill Palestinians seeking aid at the private Gaza Humanitarian Foundation sites every day. The Palestinian Ministry of Health in Gaza reported that since May 27th, when the GHF sites opened, until today, at least 2,339 Palestinians have been killed and more than 17,000 injured while trying to obtain meager amounts of food aid. This week, Instagram user Ehab Nour filmed himself at a GHF site under relentless fire while trying to obtain a bag of flour for his family. A group of experts at the United Nations, including Special Rapporteur for Human Rights in Palestine, Francesca Albanese, and Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, Michael Fakhri, condemned the ongoing enforced disappearing of starving Palestinians at the GHF sites, urging Israel to end its, quote, heinous crime against an already vulnerable population. Reports of enforced disappearances targeting starving civilians seeking their basic right to food is not only shocking, but amounts to torture. Using food as a tool to conduct targeted and mass disappearances needs to end now, the experts said. In late August, the rights group Defense for Children International Palestine reported that five Palestinian boys between the ages of 12 and 16 remain missing in separate incidents between late June and early August. DCIP says it interviewed the boys' families who have continually searched hospitals and morgues for their sons' bodies and have found no signs of them. Each of the boys disappeared while in the Zikim border area, located in North Gaza, where aid trucks cross into Gaza. The families fear their children have been abducted and disappeared by Israeli forces. Ayed Abu Aktesh, Accountability Program Director at DCIP, said, quote, "Israeli forces are shooting, detaining, and disappearing Palestinian children seeking aid in Gaza. Israeli forces have refused to disclose the numbers, names, and whereabouts of Palestinian children from Gaza in military custody, and these children have had no contact with the outside world. We have more than two decades of evidence indicating that Israeli forces torture Palestinian children in military detention. All of these children must be released and reunited with their families immediately. As the Electronic Intifada reported in August, a group of children who were kidnapped in late June by Israeli forces at a Gaza Humanitarian Foundation site in Rafah, southern Gaza, were released a month later. They described their brutal torture and detention inside Israel's Sde Tamon concentration camp, where they were interrogated, beaten, and psychologically and physically tortured. Children and adults alike are continuing to die of starvation across Gaza. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, this week stated that every single child in Gaza under 5 years old, more than 320,000 children, is at risk of acute malnutrition. On Wednesday, the Ministry of Health in Gaza reported that six deaths from starvation were recorded in a 24-hour period, including one child, bringing the total number of recorded starvation deaths to 367, including 131 children. Since the announcement 2 weeks ago by the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, the health ministry says that 89 deaths, including 16 children, have been recorded. The Gaza government media office stated on Monday, September 1st, that still only 15% of the necessary amount of trucks have entered Gaza. Looting and theft by Israel-backed armed gangs continue, the media office reports, and Israel has prevented the entry of 430 basic and vital food items, such as eggs, meat, fish, cheese, and other dairy products, fruits and vegetables, and nutritional supplements required for pregnant and nursing mothers. Israel assassinated at least two journalists in Gaza this week. On Sunday, August 31st, Islam Muharib Abed, who worked as a reporter for Al-Quds Al-Yom satellite channel, was killed in an attack on her apartment in Gaza City. On Tuesday, September 2nd, photojournalist Rasmi Jihad Salem was killed. He worked for the Al-Manara media company, Press TV, and Al-Alam TV. The Shahab news agency reported that he was killed by Israeli shelling in Gaza City. The Gaza government media office says that at least 248 reporters and media workers have been killed by Israel since October 2023. Israeli forces once again bombed the inside walls of Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah on September 1st, for the 14th time since October 2023, according to the Gaza government media office. Israel bombed a tent for displaced persons inside the walls of the hospital grounds, specifically near the hospital's outpatient clinic, the media office added. Quote, this resulted in injuries at the site of the bombing, material damage, and the immediate threat of death to dozens of patients inside the hospital. In Gaza City, reporter Saeed Hezbollah filmed a low-flying quadcopter drone hovering over the Al-Ahli Arab Hospital on Wednesday. At Al-Shifa Hospital, also in Gaza City, emergency room doctor Farhan Abdulaziz described the total destruction of hospital buildings. He walked around the nearby cemetery where patients were buried with the headboards of their hospital beds, serving as tombstones.
Standing outside Shifa Hospital, as you can see behind me, this is one side of the building completely destroyed. Blasted the walls through and then set on fire. Patients were inside that were burned alive. There was, of course, killing of patients and their families. And right outside, on the side of the hospital, you find this graveyard. And even though it's been months, you still find the smell of the dead bodies for a few reasons. One, normally we put the bodies in cement graves. These are shallow graves without any of that capability. The bodies are put right on the ground. But one of the things that breaks my heart is that you see behind me, you can see to my left, immediately behind me, and the third, three different parts of the hospital beds. The back part of beds that literally in residency, we would rush to rapid responses and take those off to intubate a patient and save their life. Literally, we would take that off to have access to the patient's head and save their life. And now you see it's a marker of death here at Shifa Hospital in Gaza, where they're using literally the markers of hospital beds. murdered, massacred by the Israeli army when they came here and killed how many people they killed and imprisoned others and took them to the torture camps. Such a sad moment in history, but a mark that we should not forget the reality of this Israeli occupation.
That was Dr. Farhan Abdulaziz. The lawyer for Dr. Hossam Abu-Safiya, the pediatrician and director of Kamal Adwan Hospital in North Gaza, who was abducted by Israeli forces at the end of December 2024, was able to visit her client on August 28th. Gid Qasim said that her client, Dr. Abu-Safiya, and his nephew are both being held in the Ofer military prison. They are both suffering from scabies and other skin infections as the Israeli prison guards are forcing them to wear the same clothes every day and are only allowed infrequent 2-minute baths. Abu-Safiya and his nephew have both lost a third of their body weight and are being held in cells without access to sunlight. They are allowed outside only 30 minutes a month, she said. Dr. Abu-Safiya gave his lawyer the following message to the world. Quote, I entered in the name of humanity, and I will leave in the name of humanity. I am the one who was abducted from inside the hospital. We will remain on our land and continue to provide healthcare services to the people, God willing, even from a tent. Meanwhile, doctors and staff at Al-Quds Hospital in Gaza City, together with the Palestine Red Crescent Society, announced that against all odds, they have successfully reactivated the cardiac catheterization clinic this week. The Red Crescent said that in a 48-hour period, medical teams successfully performed 3 cardiac catheterization procedures, with 3 more scheduled, despite the dire conditions and the shortage of essential medicines and critical medical supplies. This achievement, they say, is especially significant in light of the continued closure of border crossings, which prevents thousands of patients from traveling outside the Strip for treatment. In related news, the Hind Rajab Foundation announced that along with the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, they submitted a formal complaint to the International Criminal Court regarding the massacre at Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis on August 25th. The attack, as we reported last week, killed 22 civilians, including 5 journalists, 3 hospital staff, 1 doctor, a civil defense worker, and 1 child, 14-year-old Rayan Omar Mahmoud Abu Omar. More than 50 others were injured in what can only be described as a deliberate double-tap strike carried out with full knowledge of the civilian presence, the group stated. Lieutenant Colonel Bar Virkat of the Sayeret Golani, the reconnaissance unit of the Golani Brigade, Colonel Bar Ganon of the Golani Brigade, Colonel Miki Sharvit of the 188th Brigade, Brigadier General Moran Omar of the 36th Division, were named in the complaint to the ICC, along with other commanders and top military leaders, including Israeli Prime Minister and war crimes fugitive Benjamin Netanyahu. Quote, with today's filing before the ICC, the Hind Rajab Foundation and the Palestinian Center for Human Rights demand that the court open proceedings and issue arrest warrants against those responsible, from the Golani operators who designated the target, to the tank commanders who launched the missiles, to the generals who approved the attack, and ultimately to Prime Minister Netanyahu, who provided political cover. This massacre was not the result of chaos or confusion, but of a carefully executed plan under a clear chain of command, the group say. Journalists, doctors, rescue workers, and even a child were killed deliberately under the watching eyes of Israeli drones. This was not only a war crime, it was an act of genocide. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight What My Sister Teaches Me About Survival by Asim El-Nabi, writing from Gaza City. Nearly 13 years ago, during Israel's assault on Gaza in 2012, I took this photo of my youngest sister, Nesma, Asim writes. She was almost 5 years old, full of energy and curiosity. Despite the power cuts and relentless bombardment, she would sit quietly with her book, diligently completing her kindergarten exercises. At the time, I didn't realize that this small act, holding a pen amid chaos, would become the very definition of her life in Gaza. Today, history has repeated itself. I took another photo of Nesma, now 17 years old. The scene looks the same, Nesma, her books, and her determination. But everything else has changed. She is no longer in her room. She has been displaced for months. She no longer has teachers or classrooms. Her school is being used as a shelter. There are no textbooks, desks, electricity, or internet. She studies in the middle of a war, surrounded by hunger, siege, and death. She's survived 6 Israeli assaults on Gaza since she was born in 2008. She's brilliant, fluent in 3 languages, gifted in mathematics and physics, and dreams of becoming a doctor. But now she studies under unimaginable conditions. Still, she perseveres. Gaza's children embody extraordinary sacrifice. They have endured starvation, thirst, displacement, and the constant threat of death. What makes their suffering so profound is that the world continues to watch and express outrage, but has failed to end the genocide. Liberation is not just about weapons or politics. It is about preserving life, identity, and dignity in the face of annihilation. In Gaza, education is not just about personal ambition. It is about collective survival. Every child like Nesma who continues to learn is insisting on a future in defiance of Israel's aims to destroy it. Education cannot thrive under bombs, and no child should have to teach herself in a shelter without electricity or clean water. Our supporters outside Gaza must not only push for an end to the genocide, but also commit to rebuilding our schools, universities, and libraries, our places of knowledge and culture. Ultimately, Palestine does not need charity. It needs freedom, dignity, and the ability for its children to dream again without fear. Nesma has become my teacher. She reminds me every day that perseverance is a form of resistance, that survival itself is a statement of defiance. While powerful forces beyond their control make decisions with a profound impact on their fate, children like her quietly rebuild hope, one word, one page, and one dream at a time. When I see her diligently pursue her studies under the worst of circumstances, I know that one day Nesma will fulfill her dream of becoming a doctor. She will heal the wounds of her people, just as she heals mine with her determination to study, dream, and build a life despite the war, starvation, and siege. Those are excerpts from What My Sister Teaches Me About Survival by Asim al-Nabi, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. Asim is an engineer, a father, a husband, a writer, and the spokesperson for the Gaza municipality in Gaza City. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Gaza. Students of the Gaza-based Camp Breakers dance crew showed off their skills this week. Music teacher Ahmed Mouin Abu Amsha, whose video, as you'll remember, we featured just a few weeks ago, showing him and his students harmonizing with the hum of the drones, says he and his colleagues took their students to the beach to play music. Quote, they brought their instruments, and to our surprise, Mu'in, Ibrahim, Yusuf, Muhammad, and Yassin began singing and playing music for the children in the tents by the shore. We watched with pride and joy, realizing that our students are now following in their teachers' footsteps, spreading love, music, and hope to others. This is the strongest proof of our success in teaching music, even in the hardest times, he says. That was from Ahmed Mouin Abu Amsha. And finally, social media user and mother Noor Abdul Latif posted this photo of her son, Yamin, on his first day of kindergarten. She posted later in the day, quote, after his first day, joy lit him up so brightly, so he let go of my hand for the first time since the war began. He dashed ahead, his feet barely touching the ground, as if the sea breeze had lifted him, carried him, played with his hair. Fly, O little bird of my heart, for that's what birds are born to do, to rise, to dance with the wind, to taste the sky in freedom. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.
You're listening to Arab Voices, a syndicated radio talk show on dozens of radio stations in the US and Europe since 2002. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. On August 29th through the 31st of 2025, the second annual People's Conference for Palestine was held in Detroit, Michigan, attended by over 4,600 people, with thousands more joining them online. The conference slogan was "Gaza is the compass." There were many great speakers covering critical and timely topics, and I'm going to share during this episode of Arab Voices a couple of the remarks delivered at that conference, including the remarks of Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib and Mahmoud Khalil. Let's begin with the remarks of Mahmoud Khalil, a Palestinian graduate of Columbia University, who was unlawfully detained for 104 days by the Trump administration for his Palestine advocacy.
The student movement is the moral compass of this country. And I want to say to Abu Bakr, when he said that we give him hope. In fact, we get our hope, we get our persistence from the people of Gaza. This is our moral duty to speak up in a time of genocide. Palestine is the compass. But here's the thing. What does it mean? It cannot just be a slogan. It must guide us. How we act and how we build. It guided me in the refugee camp where I grew up. Growing up in a Palestinian refugee camp in Syria, where you are surrounded by the injustices, you see firsthand the struggle of your people. You see it in the eyes of your mother when she's asking neighbors for money to get by through the rest of the month. You see it in your neighbors. You see it in your grandparents' voices when they talk about their life in Tiberias, in Palestine. You see it in your brothers who are struggling to get a visa to travel. But also, you see it in yourself, a young boy, watching your people massacred on TV. Every conversation in the camp was about survival, but also about dignity, where every children understood, when even children understood that our lives were tied to something bigger than us. And when I got detained, I had few options. One, to remain silent and just wish that the system may vindicate me. Another option is to focus on my case, to focus on my family, and appeal to the people's emotions. And another is to focus and to connect my case to the larger case of oppression against Palestinians. I choose the latter. I chose that because I knew that I was targeted because I am Palestinian. Because I knew that by my detention, they want to deflect from the reality that Israel is committing a genocide that Israel has killed and maimed over 100,000 Palestinians and is carrying out this genocide backed by billions of US dollars money. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted me to just care about myself, just to care about my immigration status, and to ignore the plight of my people. By being vocal, I took and taking, now I'm taking a huge risk. I'm being put under a microscope by the US government. They want to intimidate me. They want to silence us. And in all honesty, it would be much easier and safer for me to remain silent. But silence is not an option and should not be an option. I will not remain silent in the face of a genocide. I will not stay silent when my people are being starved and massacred. And I will continue to keep the focus on Palestine and its liberation. In organizing spaces, there were moments when such spaces felt heavy with tension. Disagreements, egos, ideologies. Sometimes it felt that those things would pull us apart. In all these moments, every single one of them, I reminded myself and those around me that Palestine is the compass. Not our pride, not our grudges, but the liberation of our people. Palestine and Gaza are the compass means to me that we build a national liberation movement whose compass is the liberation of land and people. A movement that's bigger than me, that's bigger than any one of us. It means building the foundations of a long-term struggle, an infrastructure that will outlast us as individuals. A movement that pulls in the largest possible base of people to fight for Palestinian liberation anywhere and everywhere. Because the last thing that we want is when this genocide ends, Israel would get away with its genocide. That everyone would forget about Israel's crimes against our people. Palestine is the compass also means to me that we build a movement rooted in Palestinian voices and experiences in all their diversity, a movement open to allies across the world. And let me tell you this. The Palestinian liberation movement is winning. The fact that I was targeted by the highest officials and levels of this country means that we are winning. Means that we are succeeding in shifting the mainstream in this country for Palestine to be the mainstream. Also, it shows that our movement threatens the status quo, that it punctures the Zionist narrative and the propaganda that Israel depends on. Because Zionism only depends by portraying that Israel is a normal state. It's an ordinary state. But our work is to strip that facade until Israel stands exposed as a pariah state, until the Zionist genocidal project and the ideology of supremacy that it's built on collapse completely. Because Gaza has shown the world what resilience looks like, what truth looks like, what it means to refuse erasure, even in the face of genocide, Gaza is the compass. Palestine is the compass. And as we march forward, not as individuals, but as a people, as a movement, as a revolution, until return, until liberation, until victory. Free Palestine. Thank you.
That was Mahmoud Khalil, a Palestinian graduate of Columbia University, who was unlawfully detained for 104 days by the Trump administration for his Palestine advocacy, speaking at the second annual People's Conference for Palestine. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, born in Detroit to Palestinian immigrant parents, the first Palestinian-American woman elected to the U.S. Congress, who currently represents Michigan's 12th district, also spoke at that same conference. Let's listen in.
Well, ahlan wa sahlan. Welcome, welcome to the city that raised me. I always like to center on, again, my roots is not only as a Palestinian, but as the daughter of the most beautiful blackest city in the country, the city of Detroit. That elected the first Palestinian to the United States Congress. I like to remind people that I'm not just a typical Palestinian, I'm a Falaha. Y'all, this incredible, beautiful city that raised me makes me emotional because you need to know this is the city that sent the granddaughter of Shama Dejani from Beit Hanina, the granddaughter of Muftiya and Isa Abdullah from Beit Ur al-Foka. They sent this granddaughter of Palestine to the United States Congress. Detroit sent the descendant of Sidi Abdullah, Isa, who wouldn't leave his land even after they shot him multiple times. They thought they could kill us, rape us, imprison us, violently uproot us from our olive tree farms, starve our children to death, and we would disappear. Well, guess what? Now we're in Congress, and we're every corner of the United States. Y'all, they just don't get it. They just don't get it. They will never truly comprehend, Jama'a, even after 7 decades, that we aren't going anywhere. We are just getting started. I want to say to all of them, every genocide enabler, look at this room's. We ain't going anywhere. Show up. The least we can do to try to save lives. enabling the genocide in Gaza and dismantling the apartheid system that oppresses Palestinians. Unify so many different struggles, you all seen it, for freedom and justice at home and abroad. What's been tested on the killing fields of Gaza is already being deployed right here in the streets of America. What our government is willing to do to Palestinians, they are willing to do to all of you. It is no surprise to me, as the daughter of Detroit, that I see our government that has supplied the bombs and excuses Israel from destroying literally every single day hospitals, communities in Gaza, and manufacturing mass starvation, is also the same government that's defunding healthcare and food assistance programs here in our country. It is no surprise that a government that uses its military force to kill and torture and kidnap people abroad will turn those same forces to its own people here on the streets. A government that doesn't value human life in Gaza will never value human life in our country. Presidents and members of Congress from both parties can make millions of dollars right here in our country investing in slaughter and starvation of Palestinians, and we wonder why they don't listen to the overwhelming number of Americans who are demanding an arms embargo. I know it can feel overwhelmingly like bleak sometimes. You feel helpless. Imagine me in Congress. We have watched for the very first time, all of us, in our lifetime, the live stream genocide on our phones for nearly 2 years. We have been lied to, gaslit by a Democratic president and now a Republican president. Both parties vote time and time again to fund one of the worst crimes in history. But I need you to understand this and believe it, because I'm there in the front seat watching. Outside of the decaying halls of the Empire in Washington, D.C., we are winning. They are scared. They are scared. They send me videos and messages of people protesting in front of their district offices, people showing up at their town halls. And I was like, we're not all related. I don't know why you're sending it to me. Those are fellow Americans that may not share my faith or ethnicity showing up. Maybe you should meet with them and listen to them and not APAC. They elected you. Real change doesn't come from the cowards and warmongers in Congress. It comes from the streets. It comes from all of us mobilizing and seizing the power to resist and fight back. Every town hall they hold, somebody is showing up asking, why is the United States funding a genocide? Why haven't you, my representative in Congress, done anything to stop it? More Americans than ever, and you all have felt it, seen it, clearly see and reject the apartheid Israel's genocidal project. It's showing up time and time again in polls that show huge majorities of Americans reject the propaganda and reject the sellout representatives' excuses. More Americans are now signing the Take the APAC Out of U.S. Politics petition. More and more are rejecting it. Don't be distracted. And I'm saying this to you all as a fellow organizer that has fought so hard for my black neighbors here at home. Do not be distracted by the sellouts in our movements who are progressive but for full esteem. Don't be distracted. They will be remembered for their silence. The people who continue to enable the politicians that throw us crumbs instead of voting to stop sending all weapons are losing their souls. In time, They will be exposed for allowing racist tropes to kill our people, to starve our children. They will be remembered for it. More Americans than ever are demanding a free Palestine. They are demanding an end to the shipments of bombs, to the end of the literally helping institutions after institutions supporting and enabling this. I have seen it. A farmer in Wisconsin standing up in a town hall asking their representative, what are you doing to stop it? A mother in Maine are literally every day demanding the stop funding the genocide in Gaza. But see, that's why the lies are getting more and more outrageous. I thought it couldn't get this worse than it already was. It's why boards are overruling their own members when they vote to divest from the apartheid state and reject propaganda from extremist hate groups like the Genocide Enablers, ADL. It's why they have to make it illegal to engage in BDS, the kind of peaceful free speech they claim to support, but not for full esteem. The supporters and funders of genocide are running scared. I'm watching it happen every single day in Congress. They can only hold us off for so long. We are growing and becoming more louder. The more Palestinians they kill, the louder we are getting. The louder we are getting, the more children they starve. We cannot be ignored. We will not be ignored. Gaza is the compass in this country. And the masses around the world are with us. More governments than ever, because the incredible work you all are doing are severing ties and sanctioning the apartheid state. We are getting smarter. We know which companies are helping and we are boycotting them. We know which countries are allowing the shipment of weapons and we are showing up and demanding they halt. The tide is turning in a way that they can never be turned back. Palestine will be free. So, I need you all to understand that as disheartening, trust me, I've, as a mother, cannot just fathom watching the images as you all continue to scroll to see children torn apart by American bombs dropped on them by Israeli war criminals. Remember, there is no caging the demand for freedom. You cannot bomb an idea. Just as we did it in South Africa, apartheid will crumble. And those who support this hideous genocide will face real justice. And I know in my heart that as they continue to try to bury us, as they continue to try to kill us, try to violently suppress us on university campuses, in our workplace, everywhere, that all we keep doing as seas are flowing here is that we continue to become louder and more courageous. We will not forget the images of children on the back of a truck licking rotten rice. We will not forget the voice of Hind as they shot her up over 360 times. We will not forget what they have done, every single genocide enabler. And we're going to use every single resource in our bodies, with our voices, with our legs, with our hands, to make sure that, again, the power that we have in the streets and pushing these institutions is going to work and Palestine will be free. As you all know, many of you are organizers yourself. You know that in every room where we can't have the people we're fighting for here, we want to bring their voices here. Many of you may or may not heard of Munira al-Najjar from Gaza. Her letter is so incredibly powerful. It has reached so many people. So I'm bringing Gaza into the room by me reading her letter, her poem, her words. She said to every mother who wakes her children with a kiss and sleeps peacefully, to the sound of their laughter, to every mother who packs a school bag or waits by the window for her child's return, I write to you from a place that no longer resembles life. I am a mother just like you. I only dream to see my children grow, to prepare them a meal without first counting the airstrikes, to dress them in clean clothes that doesn't carry a scent of smoke, to let them sleep without asking, when will the war end, or why us? In Gaza, we do not live, we wait. We wait for bread, for water, for the faint signal of safety. We wait to count our children every evening and tremble at the thought that one may be missing by dawn. Mothers of the world, she says, we do not ask for your pity, but for your witness. We do not ask for silence, but for your voice beside ours, so that your children, when they grow, will know that we had children too, that we had arms and hearts and fears just like you. Let the world remember that in Gaza, mothers still give birth under fire, raise children in tents, and teach them that love survives even in war. From my small tent, I write to you with the voice of every mother who endured, every mother who grieved, and every mother who still dares to dream of peace. While I want Munira to know in this room, we see her, we hear her, and we say, free, free Palestine. Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
Thank you all so much. Continue the fight.
That was Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib speaking at the second annual People's Conference for Palestine, held in Detroit, Michigan, at the end of August 2025. I plan to air more remarks delivered at that conference during future episodes of Arab Voices. You've been listening to Arab Voices, a syndicated radio talk show on dozens of radio stations in the U.S. and Europe since 2002. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.